Box to Box Stoppage Time.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Hello and welcome to Box Stoppage Time. You're with Rob Gilbert, Michael Edgley and Willem van Denderen for our podcast, which we spun off from the main show a little while ago, a year, 12 months ago it was, I think, through the highlights of our past week, our teams, our moments of the week, plenty more. Willem and Edge, it's always tough. Sometimes we sort of pick the more obscure ones. I loved Derek's reviews of the world. Was it Willem, the beach football competition?
There's been beach football. No, he's been the leader in getting funky on this program, Rob. So fair play to him. But he's not there this week, and I had to dig. So we'll see what I come up with.
All right, we'll just hold that thought. Edge, you've got the. I'm going to use a Willem van Denderenism, which I really like. You've got the new ball this week, mate. So take us away with your game of the week, mate.
Yeah, my game of the week is the A-League Women's Elimination Final out at Estadio Tarnit.
How did you pick that one, Edge?
Obviously, because it was a fantastic game. Yes. Ironbark Fields. Is it officially called Ironbark Fields, Willem?
Not official, but I think it will be.
It will be. Okay, all right. So until it's called Ironbark Fields, we'll call it Estadio Tarnit. Western United hosted Newcastle Jets. Newcastle Jets, they'd waited 16 years to tick off the box of making a finals match, and they had to do it on away soil. And thanks to the Philippine superstar Serena Bolden, who scored a first half brace. They were ahead twice during the first half. However, Catherine Zimmerman and Alana Cern, the defender, scored her first goal for Western United to ensure that it was 2-2 at half time. And then in the second half, we had the unusual experience of the lights going out for about 20 minutes. While the backup generator got enough juice up to the big sticks to light them up again, just proving that maybe Willem, that venue might not have been ready just quietly. But anyway, that's just a little side point that you and I have discussed many times. But then enter A-League Women's Finals sharpshooter Melina Ayres, who previously has won a pair of championships and premierships with Melbourne Victory. She's also a championship player with Melbourne City way back when she was a youngster. So she knows the way around finals. And I think, as I said in the chat, Rob, she only needs one chance, doesn't she? And she got the job done. And this was the winning goal.
COVID. Now Barbieri trying to conjure a miracle ball for Ayres. Ayres steadies and scores! One source of goals to turn to. Melina Ayres was it. Newcastle lead in extra time. Hoban's pass to Barbieri, who uncorked a beauty, and the Western United defence was caught cold. Melina Ayres with all the time and space in the world. And once she wheeled onto that left foot, the outcome was inevitable. A hat-trick in 2021 in the semi-final. A goal in 2022 in the elimination final and in the preliminary final. And a hat-trick last season in the elimination final. Melina Ayres scores her ninth goal in an A-League women's final.
I'm sure it wasn't lost on the Western United fans that Melinda Barbieri passing the ball to Melina Ayres for that winner were two superstar Victorian players playing for the Newcastle Jets in the national competition. So it was a fantastic occasion, a great job by Newcastle. They did have to go into extra time to do it, and they got the job done. So that was my game of the week, Rob. Congratulations to the Newcastle Jets, who I must say will go into this weekend's first leg semi-final home fixture at Maitland in Newcastle with a lot of confidence. And I just can't wait to see all of Newcastle come out and get behind their girls for their very first home final in 16 years.
And just very briefly, Edge, I know I sort of alluded to this in the main show earlier on in the week. We gave them a pass the first time it happened, but something else happened again on the weekend, which I think has to be called out. For many years, the ABC Sports Highlights Show on a Sunday morning had been the high watermark of sports analysis and the place to go for a little bit more of a cerebral look at sport. And it's also been a forerunner in terms of ensuring that sports across women's and men's football, and not just football, every other code is covered. But on two consecutive occasions, they've dropped the ball. And the most recent one was Sunday just gone, where on the opening weekend of the A-League Women's, the premier football domestic competition in Australia, was played. Two cracking games, regardless of the venue and regardless of the blackout situation. But it was left as an afterthought. At the very back end of the show, and not even a player was name-checked. And anyone who listens to this show knows you manage Melina Ayres, but she stands up in her own right. She's an elite player and a rising superstar. But what do you think of that, Edge, when you see the contradiction in what a platform says it is and then what it delivers?
I'm just hugely disappointed. I guess I'm an example that there was 5 or 6 years when I did not miss one single episode of Offsiders. But now I just don't watch it. And I think, I'm not sure what the ratings are, but I think Willem has a similar point of view. I'm just hugely disappointed because Kelly Underwood, she should be better. She should be better. I mean, this is the world game. I mean, all of the teams that are playing in the elimination finals over the weekend have all players that have played for Australia on the global stage in multiple countries overseas. I mean, these are the future Matildas. You know, the entire A-League women's competition has gone through a incredible growth phase. It's much bigger than AFL women's, like by multiple metrics, viewership, crowd attendances, the works. And I just thought Kelly could be better. She should be better.
Yeah, and to refer to it as an afterthought and the only thing that gets referenced is a blackout was a huge disappointment. Okay, Willem, feel free to comment, but over to you for your game of the week.
I will put in a quick comment. I think that we know there's Murdoch, there's the Nine papers, there's vested interest in terms of what gets broadcast, and as I've read The Age and always have and used to get it delivered with the family and now read it online, and the football coverage is something I keep a keen eye on, and it's dwindled away, but the owners of that, you know, are no longer in lockstep with the broadcast of the game. So there's excuses and vested interests in regards to that. But in terms of the ABC, the public broadcaster, that really should be, you know, getting a proper temperature of what's actually going around. So that is disappointing. But that's been the structure of three big stories that take up 90% of the show, and then afterthoughts. So, yeah, if that's where it's found its place, I'm not particularly surprised, unfortunately. My game of the week, Rob, I did say a dig, and it comes from Shanghai. It was Port against Shandong Taishin. Kevin Muscat entered this match with an undefeated record as Shanghai manager in the league, and that was under threat early as they found themselves 3-1 down to Shandong. After 29 minutes, Muskie's side had taken the lead through Gustavo Henrique da Silva Souza, but then shipped an own goal and a couple more for good measure. They pulled one back on 33 minutes, so that got it to 3-2 at the break, and then enter one of the great names of Chinese football, who we know well here in Australia through Asian Cups and World Cup qualifying, in Wu Lei. 36 goals in 96 for his national team, and 138 goals in the Chinese Super League all told, as well as 8 in La Liga with Espanyol. He scored a second-half brace here to keep Muscat's side undefeated. They're third, and this week, Rob, they have a trip to 15th-placed Meizhou, where they will be heavily fancied.
Yeah, well, plenty of eyebrows were raised when Muskie decided to head over China, when there were lots of clubs that appeared to be looking at him in Europe. So, maybe he's taking a different tangent, but at least it's a successful one, and winning managers get noticed no matter where they're winning in the world. So good on Muskie, and keep up the good work. Okay, my game of the week is the Sydney FC Western Sydney Derby. There's other derbies now, of course, in Sydney, but sadly again, and I'm not going to expand too much on this, by a smart ass in the crowd who took the headlines off what was a cracking game. The police will investigate that, whether it was deliberate or just a stupid act, but that game did showcase the best of the A-League. Now, if you missed it, have a listen.
The cross back in, it's a great ball, back pass, oh, they've done it! Western Sydney, and it's Zach Sapsford again! Unbelievable! His third A-League goal. And they've all come in the derby. Unbelievable scenes. In the 95th minute. Here we go again. Caceres. the cross, back post, Kaczorski! Oh!
Well, I don't need to repeat what happened because you heard the great Robbie Thompson describe it so beautifully. He is one of our most fantastic sports commentators in sport, bar none, let alone football. So it was a winless, scoreless opening three games that we're all well aware of. It ended up with the sacking of Steve Corriker. And under my very good friend Ulfric Talle, Sydney FC has rebounded and secured its finals berth with games to spare. Now, Wanderers hold on to their top six spot, but they're vulnerable with Melbourne City breathing down their necks, a point behind, and the scriptwriter's dream is exactly what will play out. They play this weekend. Now, Willem, that was a cracking game. The Sky Blues thought they had the points deep into stoppage time, then the equaliser, and ultimately the winner deeper into stoppage time.
Yeah, it was, and it always delivers on the field, and it has not necessarily always been in an even manner. There have been some beltings over recent years, but the gravity of the Sydney Derby and the fact that it's our highest drawing game probably edges the Melbourne Derby. I think we've got 20,000-odd here with the RBB back in force after a resolution from the issues of the previous one. But yeah, it's always an event, and you know, as much as we like the even nature of what the league could be if everyone played each other home and away once or twice. Economically, you can understand why they schedule this fixture three times as a marquee game because, yeah, it always delivers, and they've played a couple of times in the cup, and there was a finals derby last year as well. So, no, it always delivers, Rob. And, yeah, there's one, you know, banana, to put it lightly, who's misbehaved in the crowd, but they've got him pretty clearly on footage, and he'll get the long-term Tijuana. So yeah, and going back to my previous point, that's been the story that's been written up in the papers. You were right to say it's taken the headline away, but yeah, I think anyone with an interest in the game can look beyond that and see it was a brilliant game. 2-1 drama, goals in added time, broader ramifications for the finals, which we look forward to over the next few weeks. Young stars scoring, Sapsford and Kaczorski, they're the future for those two clubs. So no, all round really positive and a cracking game.
Yeah, no, well said, mate. Okay, what's your team of the week, mate?
Yeah, I'll stay with the A-League, and we'll go Melbourne City Men's. Now, you recounted Sydney FC season there. It's also been really up and down for City, to say the least. Rado Vidicic let go after round three, replaced by Aurelio Vidmar. And they have been so consistent for so many years. Those foundations under Monbert and Kisnorbo that led to championships and premierships have most certainly been eroded in place of something a little bit more boom-bust. They lost early 6-0 to Adelaide and 5-1 to Brisbane in there as well. They've also had an 8-1 win over Brisbane and a 7-0 win over the Wanderers, and now an 8-0 win over Perth, which is the biggest winning margin ever in the A-League men's era, and does put them within a point of the Wanderers in sixth. Two goals to Leo Natel, a hat-trick to Tolgay Arslan, and I spoke about how the side's changed. I think the edge probably epitomises City's shift away from the likes of the pretty calm and consistent Florin Berenguer. This guy's anything but. He's tempestuous and angry, but he's undeniably brilliant. He blows hot and cold, and on this day he scored a hat-trick. And there were also goals for Jamie McLaren and Ugarkovic. And I'll come to you just after playing this little clip of McLaren, who spoke to Michael Zapponi for Channel 10 post-game.
I'm the captain of the club, mate. So, you have to accept the decisions. And this is a team sport. And I had to help the boys, rally the boys through the good results, through the bad ones, and help young Maxi, because at the end of the day, he's probably the guy that's going to be banging in the goals for this club next season. So, you just want to be there for the support. And when I get my chance, I try and take it. And like today, Vidi put me back in, and I thought it was justified.
That's Jamie speaking there in reference to his recent spell on the bench in favour of young Max Caputo. Sounds like he's gone officially. Edge?
Yeah, we think so. I think he's off to greener pastures, and he's at the stage of his career where he should cash in on his profile and his international success with the Socceroos. And his time at that club is coming to an end. And, I think you don't have to be Einstein to work that out.
throwing back to, thanks, Edge. Throwing back to you, Rob, a quick word for the Glory supporters who always put up good numbers. The Eastern Australian Glory fans were all over it on X. They got some good numbers together, and then they had a couple of beers at the Cricketers Arms on Punt Row, the Victorian football fans have done over the years. And yeah, sat there and supported their boys through an 8-0 pasting.
Yeah, classy venue, that Cricketers Arms, for anyone who hasn't visited. Certainly not the list must go to hospitality establishments. Edge, your team of the week.
Yeah, well, I'm going to stick with the A-League Women's. It is the finals time, and how could we not go past Central Coast Mariners, Rob, who and their goalkeeper, Casey Nemont, who I want to sort of talk about a little bit of the backstory. But just overall, Central Coast Mariners, given little hope at the start of the year, their budget was not as good as Sydney FC or Melbourne Victory or Melbourne City. They punched above their weight there the whole time throughout. Emily Husband, unheralded coach. Yes, she'd had a very good NPL New South Wales career, but it was obviously a big step up to the A-League's women. She recruited extremely cleverly. She was able to put together the nucleus of a club and team that was out of the NPL in New South Wales, some recycled players from clubs that needed other chances, and some clever international recruitment. So, yeah, it's been fabulous, the Central Coast Mariners. They've proved everybody along, including me. I thought they would come stone motherless last, but they've got themselves into a semi-final two-legged playoff with Sydney FC. They'll have great support at Industry Group Stadium when they face off against Sydney FC next Sunday. But it's not worth without commenting about Casey Nemont. There's an incredible backstory here. Casey was actually contracted to Melbourne Victory for this season. However, her decision to take a multi-sporting option and take a contract at AFL Women's Club Hawthorn basically got the management of Melbourne Victory offside, and they terminated her contract a year early. Casey then went and played for Hawthorn in the AFL women's competition. I actually think she only played one game, which sort of makes it all a bit interesting. They saw her as a bit of a project player. Maybe she'll get a go next year. But then Casey picked up a contract to go to Central Coast in January. We know her quality. And it just so happened that she faced her former club, Melbourne Victory, in the playoff on the weekend, and it just so happened to go to penalty shootouts. We know Casey likes to take penalties as a goalkeeper. That's an odd thing. She took the first one, just smashed it emphatically home, as she's done for Melbourne Victory in years gone by, and then she was able to make two saves through the course of the shootout. Her comments after the match, you could tell that she'd been waiting to let loose on this. Her comments were pretty prophetic. She effectively said that the club put out some information that wasn't exactly what happened, that she was sacked by the club. She didn't want to be sacked by the club. She loved playing for Melbourne Victory, but she had to take it on the chin and because she'd made a commitment to Hawthorn. And interestingly enough, she got on social media. Molly Appleton, who's a big A-League women's fan, said Demont gets her fairy tale. The team that dropped her, saying she wasn't committed enough, staying cool, calm and collected to score the opening penalty and going on to save two to win it. She surely has to go down as the Dubs' best penalty operator, both goalkeeper and scorer. And Casey got on to that and said it felt so good when get sacked and get to prove a point. And she well and truly did.
So, Edge, since we're using the AFL theme, I'm wondering if you could tell me what the AFL legend Teddy Whitten might have said after she scored that goal.
I think Teddy Whitten would have said it, and Neil Knuckles Curley in South Australia would have said it, and that is, we stuck it right up him.
Exactly. That is exactly what they would have said. Well done, Casey Demont. I think you've proved your point. Okay, now my team of the week is, well, someone had to choose them, Bayer Leverkusen. Now, we don't often play packages that go for 2 minutes, but when you haven't won a title ever and you've broken a drought that goes on for a century, I think you've earned it. So sit, if you haven't seen the game or the highlights, sit back and enjoy the next couple of minutes.
The Invincibles, one win from being the Immortals. A season the like of which the German game has never seen before. The numbers astonish. 42 matches, 37 wins, 5 draws across 3 competitions. a maiden Meisterschale, a first ever Bundesliga title, is one win away. Today can be, should be, the day we never say Leverkusen again. Hoffmann, great ball to find Victor Boniface. It's Boniface for Leverkusen here. And the shot! Oh! Granit Xhaka! The engraver can start on the B of Bayer Leverkusen. Relentless and now, surely doubtless, to be Bundesliga champions. Weiser robbed here by Grimaldo. He'll break away here. Can they find one more goal to round the afternoon off? What a pass for Wirtz, who's never scored a senior hat-trick. He has now. Extraordinary. Florian Wirtz, what a time to pitch to score your first ever hat-trick on the day the team win the Bundesliga title. 0-4 Leverkusen. Deutscher Fußball Meister. Xavi Alonso and the perfect chemical reaction. Alchemy beneath the Bayer cross. They are for the first time champions of the Bundesliga.
Quite incredible, isn't it? Yes, after 120 years, for the first time in their history, they've won the Bundesliga title. James Gibrandt from the Times, he wrote beautifully, almost never before has a team done to their curse what Leverkusen have this season, blown it to smithereens, overwhelm it with sheer magnificence and magic, wrap it up in the golden chain of a 43-match unbeaten streak and bury it in an ocean of joy. The BBC, Xavi Alonso's side wrapped up the title with five games to spare after a crushing 5-0 win over Werder Bremen in front of their jubilant supporters. The overjoyed fans spilled onto the pitch to celebrate after Leverkusen moved to 79 points, 16 more than their nearest rival, Bayern Munich, with just 15 points left to play for. A remarkable achievement by former Liverpool and Real Madrid midfielder Alonso, who took charge in October 2022 with the club's second bottom of the table. Leverkusen's triumph ended by a stranglehold on the league after 11 titles in a row. Just an incredible sporting story, this one. You know, we've seen stories of curses broken around the world in American baseball, the Cubs and the Red Sox, of course, in Australian sports. I grew up following the Cronulla Sharks, and the great Jack Gibson once said that you don't leave the porch light on waiting for Cronulla to win a grand final. And then when they eventually won, the great quote was, "Ding dong, the witch is dead." So one of the great sporting edge curses is over by Leverkusen, champions of Germany.
Yeah, I hope their fans celebrated long and hard. I'm sure they did. It is a great story. And that was a great package too, Rob.
Yeah, it was wonderful. So if you haven't watched it, it's so much better when you see the vision there, the stadium, Willem, the crowd. In fact, there was some stoppage time left to go, but there were so many people on the pitch that they couldn't resume the game.
Yeah, no, that's how you win them, Rob, as you've set out, after such a long period of pain and derision at the hands of opposition fans. Five games to go. Demoralised the 11 times holders, smacked them earlier in the season and had their manager saying a couple of weeks ago, "Congratulations, all yours." So they've done that emphatically, to say the very least.
Yeah, exactly. We'll stay with you for Hot Topic, Willem, as we wrap it up. I know I've sort of overindulged with the Bayer Leverkusen. So what's your Hot Topic to bring us home, mate?
It's a bit of a watch. I'm going back to Asia. It's just in South Korea. He moved to FC Seoul in February, and to have a big name Premier League player move to an Asian league is not unique, but it is rare, particularly in this day and age. He played the first three games of the K-League season, and the first one of those, his debut, drew 51,000 to their opener against Incheon. That was a record by some distance in terms of attendance for the league under the sort of modern means of how they track the crowds. I think they might have had, reading between the lines, they might have had bigger crowds, but not monitored as such in the past. So this was a record. There were long queues at the Lingard Zone. It was the full fanfare sort of adulation welcome. A knee injury has kept him out of the past month, and his manager Kim Gi-dong has now said that he's going to have minor surgery and miss a further month. There had been a few signs of strain with Lingard and the manager. Kim said after the third game that he only played a few minutes and yet he didn't work hard and avoided tussle. Fame doesn't win you football games. If it did, I would have brought in a famous retired player. But despite that, there's been a bit of commentary from some sort of linguistic experts that those words are maybe a little bit lost in translation, and that's seen more as encouragement. Apparently, reports are good. He's been engaged and a willing participant in the group, and that things could turn around. So certainly one to watch, Rob. This could go south. It could still be best. Write up on the BBC Football website. Actually, we'll come to you, Edge. Good write up on the website of BBC Football if you're interested in reading a little bit further. But yeah, we've trialled with Marquise in the A-League on more than one occasion. Always a hot topic for us. Here it is playing out in South Korea.
Well, I'll tell you what, Willem, there's a marquee in America that is playing out quite well. I just noticed that Sporting Kansas City host Inter Miami at Arrowhead Stadium instead of its 18,500-seat Children's Mercy Park, and they set a club record attendance of 72,610 people. And Messi was able to get an assist and a 25-metre curling shot to win the game. Top five MLS attendances, 82,110 LA Galaxy, LAFC in 2023. The Kansas City-Miami one is the fourth biggest attendance in MLS history. So the marquee seems to be going okay over there, but he is a special marquee.
That's a bit of a different marquee to old Jesse Lingard.
Edge, keep rolling, mate, with your hot topic, brother.
Well, my hot topic is I'm going to let a legend of Melbourne Victory put the National Second Division teething issues or the elephant in the room back fairly and squarely on the table. Let's have a listen to Ben Kafala, who's now a very respected player agent, but he's talking big picture-wise about the second division in Australia, and I think it'll create some good discussion for us in a moment. Let's have a listen.
The second division is a great idea.
Yep.
If you have relegation and promotion, if the value of a club is 15 million or 20 million, if you go to second division, it doesn't have the same value. It goes to 2 million or 3 million, whatever. So owners would be afraid of it. Now you start spending money to bring better players. You start making proper decision. If you have to sack a coach because he's not doing well, you have to sack him. And then obviously it increases the level. You have to develop young players. Or you must have better academies.
Squad.
That's the kind of stuff you need to have. And then all of a sudden you play for something. Trust me, if you have a game, end of the season, for example, imagine South Melbourne in second division trying to get promoted and Melbourne Victory trying to remain. And you have a playoff game. What do you think the game, the stadium is going to be packed?
I think Ben Kafala quite elegantly has just exposed what the problems of this second division whole thing is. And the sooner we sort of get in tune with the rest of the world and have a strategy to deploy promotion and relegation, even if the A-League owners cut up rough about it, it's something worth really pursuing. He says it eloquently. If you're a club in the A-League that's going to get relegated, you're going to pull out all stops to avoid that. And if you're a club that's in the frame for promotion, you're going to pull up all stops to achieve that. So I just thought it was cuts through really nicely. What is happening with the second division? We haven't heard anything for a long time. Is it just going to be eight clubs? Are they going to disband it? Are they going to announce four new clubs? The scuttlebutt that I'm hearing out of sort of NPL land is that this thing is nowhere and everyone's really, really quite concerned.
Did we talk about this in our first show 10 years ago, nearly, Edge?
Yeah, we did. But I just thought it was timely that Ben Kafala made those very pertinent comments as why promotion and relegation probably should be at the centrepiece of a strategy around a second division. At the currently, it's not.
Yeah, no, Fahigel Ben Kafala, the French-born Tunisian, played 100 games in the A-League, 450 games as a journeyman, 14 games for his native Tunisia, if anybody was qualified to make a comment. And now in his post-football career as a player agent, than he is. Okay, look, I'm just going to briefly mention this because, you know, it's a story that if it had been in just about any other sport, it would still be reported on every single day. And this is by no means a witch hunt. It's just a matter of keeping the Sam Kerr story on the front pages because the courts will determine the guilt or innocence. The question mark still remains as to whether Football Australia are just continuing to kick this can down the road, and their cause has been done no further good because the legal battle's been put on ice even further after the prosecution was granted an extension in lodging documents outlining their case against Kerr. The extension comes after the prosecution was reportedly unable to gather enough evidence, including CCTV footage, to cross-examine the Matildas captain, according to News Corp. They were also yet to obtain written statements from the police officers involved in the incident, which took place on January the 30th, 2023, for God's sake. The Crown Prosecution Service originally requested CCTV footage and statements from the police on February 19 before following up on March the 18th. So the latest setback means the prosecution now has until April 23 to lodge its case documents. Now, you know, there are many, many adages in the world of the law, but one of them that we all know, whether you've studied law or otherwise, is that justice delayed is justice denied. And the longer this goes on, the more that Sam Kerr is looking like a person who is having her justice delayed and subsequently denied. So I'd make no comment as to her guilt or innocence. My concerns are over the way the case is being handled now, and then Football Australia just not commenting and making a decision, or at least giving us some guidance on where this is ultimately going to go. All right, we'll wrap it up. We'll keep talking about all those stories in the fullness of time. Willem, thanks again, mate.
Thank you, Rob. And when we do reassemble in Melbourne and you take us to the promised dinner at the Flower Drum, which I've not forgotten about, I'll take you post that once we've extracted ourselves from our seats for a couple at the Cricketer's Arms. First on me.
Oh, my God. Thank you. I might be pulling the pin early that night. Michael, thank you, mate.
Thank you, Roberto. Very good to be back on Stoppage Time. Let's see you all next Monday for another edition of Box to Box, and enjoy your football on the weekend. And oh my God, A-League Women's Finals. What are we going to be talking about next week? I can't wait.
Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting. My tip is there will be an upset. Who is the upset going to be? Return, same bat time, same bat channel next week. Adam Maloney, thank you for pulling together Stoppage Time yet again. And to our listeners, thank you so much for listening, for subscribing, for telling your friends. We're really getting some good feedback on our shows, and we're very, very grateful to you for that. Please subscribe if you haven't already to Box to Box, Stoppage Time and Offside, wherever you get your podcast. Twitter's at Box to Box NTS, and follow us on X, like us on Facebook if you haven't already, and make sure you join us throughout the week as our podcast drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the world game.